Hello and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. In recent months, evidence of greater damage to Australia's Great Barrier Reef shocked many in the scientific community. Coral bleaching was that evidence, and for researchers around the world, it signaled a pressing need for scientists to come out of the lab and speak out. Ruth Gates is no stranger to either. She continues to talk about the unprecedented level of coral destruction that we're collectively witnessing worldwide and in Hawaiian waters. We met up a few days ago, and I asked her about the rate of progress for the death of coral.
You know, I think the problem is the rates of change are so rapid. It's like the baseline is shifting before our very eyes. And so for the coral reef, and I'll use that because that's my real area of expertise, we've seen, you know, this huge destruction associated with two warm waters on the Great Barrier Reef, you know, with figures like 67% of the reefs in the northern area killed outright. Some of the news coming in from Christmas Island is that 95% of the reef has been killed. That's a reef that people depend on. So now we're at that juncture where we're looking at destruction of the reef and the downstream impact of the loss of all the services. And that is, of course, food, coastal protection, and in places like Hawaii, of course, it will be tourism. And you see this fear with the tourist industry in Australia now emerging, where people are visiting because they think it might be the last time they see a live coral reef.
It's frightening any way you look at it, and not just from the standpoint of tourism and dollars coming into either Australia or, in this case, to Hawaii, but its impact and long-term impact on those who you say depend on it for very simple things, sustenance.
That's right. The core systems, I mean, really, what do we need to survive? We need somewhere to live, we need food to eat, and we need water to drink. That's what we need. All of these core systems are somewhat threatened by the degradation of ecosystems in the ocean. You know, these deep sea ocean ecosystems that are being mined before we've even described what's there. I mean, we don't really understand how that piece of the jigsaw fits into the overall functionality of our planet and the balances of things that we breathe, the oxygen that we breathe. We're destroying things before we understand them. And that, to me, is terrifying. It will lead to a much more chaotic environment where people themselves are competing for the basic things that are important to survival, space to live on. You know, these islands that are very low-lying already that lose their reefs will lose land, and the people who live there will have to move. They'll have to move, and they'll have to move to places like Hawaii, and then there will be competition for the resources that we need here in Hawaii as our population is growing. So you can see that level of conflict will start to increase moving forward if we continue to see such mass destruction in the environment.
Are you surprised that with everything that we know, with as much information that we have today that we've never had before, with our accessibility to get information and to hear back from people through social media, among other things, that we don't understand this?
Yes, and I think what I'm stunned by is that we do have a lot of science that tells us what the answer is. We know that if we don't mitigate the incredible amount of CO2 in our atmosphere, our planetary system will change radically and in ways that we cannot really predict. The science is firm. There's no discussion. What stuns me is that we can understand how the problem has arisen and what we can do about it, but we're not actually doing anything about it. And, you know, I sometimes analogize to, we know obesity, for example, is killing people, and that this is a deeply emotional topic for the person who's dying, and yet many people will continue to eat really poorly, even when they are overweight, and they know what the end point is, but somehow are unable to stop, right? So that's an emotional connection that just doesn't seem to be working, and often people will say, Ruth, if you could just connect people effectively to these ecosystems, to coral reefs, they will care more about them. And the question is, will they?
In the political climate in which we find ourselves now, and the leadership, or some would say lack of leadership, to be able to understand some of the things that you've been talking about, or that you wish people would understand better, we find ourselves kind of casting about, wondering really what is the role of science and scientists these days that's so different? What is a way forward when you don't have leadership that believes in it?
Well, I mean, I think we all have a responsibility to get behind the ideas and the beliefs that we have and start pushing these up to our decision makers. You know, decision makers, I think, often will be making decisions that have sort of short-term gains where you can see improvements in metrics and numbers that make sense on the short term, but that may have really detrimental effects in the long term. So you may make a lot of jobs right now in coal industry, for example, but we know that that is really going to be a blip on the landscape when we see the CO2 impact start to influence the planetary condition. There will be a loss of jobs everywhere that are associated with the catastrophic events that happen as a result. So I think that people need to engage, not just scientists. Scientists don't need to be the only ones. Everybody is a scientist, let's face it. Everybody has information and knowledge that tells them that they need to act in a certain way. And instead of waiting for others to give them permission, it's time to start taking the reins and moving forward, advancing on your own politicians and making your needs and desires known, pushing the edge of, you know, Hawaii's tourist industry will depend on coral reefs. We have to protect them here. We have to do everything in our power to make sure we have reefs in the future. And I believe that if we don't act fairly rapidly, we're going to have no reefs in the next 20 to 30 years.
Acting on protection is part of what Senator Mazie Hirono and Representative Colleen Hanabusa have in mind with the Coral Reef Sustainability Through Innovation Act of 2017. This was something that was, at least with Senator Hirono, introduced last year. It went nowhere. When I talked to her and I asked her, how much attention do you think it's going to get this year? And she, you know, her answer is, well, maybe not a lot, but it's going to keep being out there. And the idea is to keep this an active conversation. Keeping that a conversation is what I'm hearing you say. That's our part of the job.
That's exactly right. Everybody who cares about reefs needs to talk about them from their perspective, from the traditional knowledge holders to these politicians who are advocating the position and importance of reefs for place. And here in Hawaii, for our place, reefs are intimately interconnected with us, our health, and our future. So the reality is this conversation has to be kept alive, and we have to say the things that feel uncomfortable. We might see the death of all or the majority of the world's reefs in the next 30 years, in our lifetime. Even the science community is struggling with the enormity of accepting that emotionally disturbing fact. But that is the truth. That's what the evidence tells us. And these kinds of bills are really attempting to partner the federal government with private organizations to accelerate the rate at which we apply new science and technology to preserving and sustaining our reefs. What could possibly be wrong with that? What are the downsides for making this happen? I see none.
Some people would say the downside would be that the opposition would have to admit it's wrong.
Let's forget about who's right or wrong. Let's just think about what we want to do from here to affect our future. You know, this blaming is not getting us anywhere. The reality is what we need to do is all get together and say from this point forward, we will behave in a certain way and we will attempt to improve the prognosis for reefs by doing everything in our power to do it. You know, really, that's what it comes down to for me.
Do you see that happening in any small pockets that might be a model for what you'd like to see happen in a more macro environment?
I do, and I think actually the science community, which, you know, to be honest, academic scientists tend to compete with one another all the time to do the same thing more quickly. Well, I think what I see is the problem on reefs is causing our community, the reef community, science community, to come together and think much more holistically about how we operate and how we generate new knowledge that can affect an impact on the future. And that is exciting for me because I'm a highly collaborative scientist myself. I see incredible value of convening different perspectives that will ultimately add up to something much larger than any one scientist could do. And I think that that's an opportunity. We see that magnify with the March for Science. We see that knowledge itself and evidence itself is under attack. And people are coming together to defend that position and to advance the agenda in more entrepreneurial ways. And I think that's very, very exciting.
Ruth Gates, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Ruth Gates is the director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii. She's president of the International Society for Reef Studies and leads a globally recognized research group. She and her Australian colleague, Madeline Van Oppen, won the Paul Allen International Ocean Challenge with their concept to develop corals that would survive climate change. Ruth Gates was also featured in the 2017 Sundance Award-winning documentary, Chasing Coral, which screened at the Hawaii International Film Festival last month. Thank you.